Hey everyone, welcome back to the 443 Security Simplified. I'm your host, Mark LaLiberty, and joining me today is...
Daddy Shark, doo 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 doo, Daddy Shark, doo 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 doo, Daddy Shark, doo 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 doo, Daddy Shark.
Otherwise known as Corey Knockhainer.
In today's episode,
we have... There's another additional view to the 2.1 billion views of that child's video.
Hard pass. In today's episode, we have two different news topics we're covering, one involving Reddit account lockouts and another with a global DNS hijacking campaign. And then we jump into Corey's favorite YouTube personality.
Stop it, Mark. Stop it. Don't brand me with this guy.
PewDiePie and his army of bros hacking the world. With that, let's jump in. So let's start with the news. First on the list today, on Thursday, Reddit announced that they had locked a large group of accounts due to unusual activity that did not correspond to the account's normal behavior. They didn't release any exact numbers of how many accounts were locked, but the...
I thought it was like up to 517 million or something like that.
That's quite a bit. They did state that the most likely explanation was just simple password use or reused credentials across multiple websites. But this is kind of a common trend that we're seeing lately with accounts being taken over because people are reusing passwords, right?
We don't know for sure. It's credential stuffing, which is i.e. another breach is lost passwords get reused somewhere else. I mean, some people said it could be part of some other hijack too. They haven't said why, but they simply said the way they found it, as you said, was some sort of mass behavioral differences. So to their credit, one thing that's really cool is one cool new security technology that people are looking at today is something called YUBA, if you want to use acronyms. It stands for User and Entity Behavioral Analytics.
I'm a security expert. I love acronyms.
Yes, of course, especially when they're marketing ones, right? But anyways, it's a good concept. I mean, you know, if you have a normal user, you pay attention to when they log on, how often they interact, where they're logging on from, and then you can look for lots of cool anomalies, like, you know, if suddenly you get 500 logins from that user over and over again from different periods of time, that's obviously kind of weird. So it's cool that they have those type of technologies to monitor for this type of thing, because otherwise it's kind of hard to find. And one thing I like about Reddit, even when they had that major two-factor breach, because they use text-based two-factor as well as app-based, I think that was a few months ago, right?
That was probably a bit longer than that now, actually.
Well, either way, they're very transparent about it. You know, to me, I judge, you know, everyone will have security breaches occasionally. So I judge companies on their transparency. So they were very transparent back then. I feel like while we still don't know for sure whether it's credential stuffing or some other reason that these bad guys seem to have a bunch of passwords, they are trying to be as transparent as they can as they're investigating it.
So let's say it is credential stuffing then. This seems like a good use case for multi-factor authentication, right?
Always, man. I have my Reddit multi-factor token in Authpoint right now on my phone. So I can't log on to Reddit without Authpoint. And because it's not text-based, I don't have to worry about the first hijack either. So absolutely. It's also, I mean, credential stuffing. We keep on saying, we've said it over and over on this show, don't use the same password everywhere. If you don't have multi-factor, although I really highly recommend you do, you should at least use a password manager with strong passwords.
Yeah, we were just talking at a conference you and I both went to with some folks, and I mentioned that I honestly do not know a single one of my passwords for any of my accounts.
Yeah.
Because by now, they're all just randomly generated 30-character lines.
And that's a favorite feature. You look at it and you're like, it looks like a hash checksum or something like that. There's no way I would remember it. But it's kind of cool. Other than the one password you need to use to get into your vault, you don't have to know much.
Yeah.
And by the way, there's a lot of free options. There's browsers. I think iOS has started to add password managers right in where it's giving you passwords right in your phone. macOS has done it for a while, Windows. You know, people always ask us what our favorite password manager is. I've used 1Password. I've used LastPass. I've used a number of them. You know, because we're security experts, we won't tell you exactly what we use now. But honestly, it's not about which one you use. You might read that some have vulnerabilities, but I would say the big ones tend to fix them pretty quickly. A lot of people argue against, but aren't they storing all your passwords in the cloud? I actually think that's a good thing for a convenient system because every one of us uses multiple devices. So without that cloud storage, we wouldn't be able to share our passwords back and forth between our phone and computer. But anyways, the biggest password managers out there have encrypted in the cloud and also in a way where even that vendor themselves can't recover your passwords. So as long as you use them properly and you have a good, strong password as your master password, even the cloud assistant ones are, you know, that is a risk I'm willing to take. By the way, the risk of that is people worry that, well, of course, I would target everyone's password manager by going to that vendor's cloud.
Yeah, so long as the encryption itself doesn't become broken, so long as someone doesn't make a quantum computer and break AES-256, they're generally pretty safe up there because so LastPass as an example has been quote unquote hacked like 3 times now by my count.
Yeah.
But they respond within 24 hours. They say they never got to the database. And even if they did, they'd literally just have a giant encrypted ball of unrecoverable passwords.
The key thing is, since LastPass can't recover your password because only you retain the private key, even if an attacker gained full access to LastPass's network, they might have access to all LastPass's data. And as you say, they might have access to that big cloud tarball of whatever, you know, storage they use, but they won't actually get into your master store
passwords. And from my understanding with it too, you never submit your password to LastPass. They basically download it and sync it into your browser or your app or whatever, wherever you're using it.
That's interesting.
And so it decrypts it locally then too. That way your password is never sent across the internet.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, it's still, if you don't have a strong master password, you're going to have a bad time if someone's able to get hold of
you,
that.
If you have an eight character, one word, English word password, it doesn't matter what
exactly
where you put them.
And you mentioned UBA as well, or UBA, or UBA, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, I don't know.
Do you think that's going to be a replacement to passwords at all in the future? Maybe we just walk up to a computer and it like reads our face and like our skin temperature and goes, oh, you're Mark, and lets you in.
Oh, biometrics? No,
but
way.
Also like where I'm at, where I'm logging in.
So
like
I do think dynamic authentication will be a thing. And I think it's going to be a mix of usability and stronger tokens, meaning maybe a biometric, which by the way, a biometric can be weak, is good enough to get you into your account at first. You won't have to use a mobile token. You won't have to use an additional strong password. But as soon as a user logs in, they'll start monitoring behavior. It's not only where you came from for the first login, but they'll continue to watch you dynamically. And if suddenly a behavior gets a little suspicious, then they'll send the second factor at you, which will become a little stronger than the first factor. So everyone's talking about dynamic authentication, which is basically using UBA behavioral analytics to, let's make it easy for you to log in at first, but if you start doing some weird crap, I'm going to make it harder and harder. So it's a good mix between usability, but that better security. So that's definitely where MFA and authentication is going. Although if you recognize, that's still an MFA solution. That's just the MFA solution tied to some behaviors. And even in our own auth point, while we're not doing the anomaly detection ourselves yet, and that might be a roadmap item, when you do get the message on your mobile phone for that second approval factor, we use push, so you don't have to type anything, it does at least tell you where in the world you're authenticating based on that IP address. So it's not only you knowing, oh yeah, I just typed my password, but you get this message, yeah, I am in Salt Lake City, so I will approve that, or no, I'm not in Chile.
I mean, it is probably pretty chilly in Salt Lake City.
That's probably true. I actually, we know. Dad joke, man. Ba-dum-bump.
Oh man, murder me.
But by the way, you started out, as much as we dived into password managers, which are important, multi-factors the way it is, I guess I am pimping out AuthPoint a little bit, but do know with Reddit, if you're not a WatchGuard customer, you can grab Google Authenticator and have good multi-factor with Reddit just for free.
And you should. You should enable multi-factor wherever you can, even for something as simple as your Reddit account.
And our argument is still, we think text-based multi-factor authentication is getting bad. It's weak enough that it should not be a first choice. But even if that's the only option at a site, I'd much rather you have text-based multi-factor than nothing at all.
I think I agree with you on that. So let's move on to our next news item. Last Wednesday, FireEye disclosed that they had identified a wave of DNS hijacking affecting dozens of domains belonging to government, telecommunications, and internet infrastructure entities across the Middle East, North Africa, Europe, and North America. They didn't want to directly point a finger, but they said that most signs are pointing to some sort of Iranian sponsorship with this. And the attackers actually had a few different attack methods on hijacking these domain names. The first one, they would use just compromised credentials for a DNS provider to log in and change the DNSA record. If you're not a DNS expert, the A record is basically what your
domain
browser looks up in order to turn a domain name into an IPv4 address, a traditional IP address.
That's less a vulnerability, even though they did things like use valid TLS search to make their poisoning look more valid. If you really have the registrar's login, it's no surprise you can affect DNS at a mass level.
Yep. The second method, though, they compromised the registrar itself and then used that in order to change the name server, so the authoritative name server for the domain, to something under their control. So when you make a, well, when your computer makes a DNS query, it doesn't jump to a single server and get the answer immediately. Usually that server has to go submit other queries, starting with like .com and then .com.watchguard and then .com.watchguard.subdomain name.
So basically you would start, if you're a company, you start by asking your own server, and your own server's like, I haven't cached that. I'm going to go to some root server I know to figure out what's going on. And the root server says, oh, I'm going to go look and see who says they're watchguard.com. And then you get that server. And yeah,
along totally the chains. Way, you get the authoritative name server who is in charge of that particular domain. And so in this attack method, they changed that authoritative name server to something under their control, basically saying, yeah,
pretty cool,
I know
scary.
All the records. Yeah. The third one was more of just an augment to the other two, where they set it up to filter the requests that were getting redirected, where if they received a request for something they wanted to hijack, they would then point it towards a compromised IP address. Whereas if they received something for like google.com, which they didn't necessarily care about, they'd let it go through and forward on to the actual correct DNS server. You mentioned that they used valid certificates. They found they were using Let's Encrypt, which is a free certificate authority.
And we've talked about that before. We're all pro, you and I guess I'm speaking for you, you can confirm or deny, we're pro encrypting all of the web.
Yep.
And Let's Encrypt is an organization that, you know, it used to be you had to pay money to get signed certificates from, you know, certificate authorities to have a HTTPS page, but Let's Encrypt made it easy and free to kind of promote even a hobbyist website having encryption. And it's a good thing. We're not against Lex Encrypt, but we knew right from the beginning, I mean, free is great for criminals too. And Let's Encrypt is something that has been abused for a long time. You know, there's probably botnet command and controls that are encrypted with Let's Encrypt certificates, harder to detect them if you don't have HTTPS deep packet inspection. There's malware sites. And in this case, you know, they're putting a valid certificate for their fake domain tied to that IP, for their fake A record, right? So, and the reason they're able to do that is, you know, once you have control of changing the A record, because you have the registrar's password, it's easy to add a new TLS certificate, and Let's Encrypt just makes it free and easy to create them.
And to the end user, this means that when you are a victim of this attack, when you go to the compromised domain, you'll still see that green lock.
Everything's going to look hunky-dory. Or as you keep reminding me, not green for so long. It's might not even be a lock for a while, since it would just be secure or unsecure.
Yep.
But either way, it will look like your website is secure and nothing is wrong. Because technically, nothing is wrong other than someone hacked the the A record.
Yeah. And the reason I wanted to bring this up is it kind of goes with one of our 2019 predictions.
Yeah, it's close to.
I made the bold prediction that someone's going to take the internet hostage in 2019, probably by compromising weak points on the internet, the infrastructure,
or protocols. There's two protocols I think you focused on.
Yeah, BGP. And one of them being DNS. We already saw what happens when you denial service a DNS provider with Dyn.
Yep.
What was it, 2017 now?
Mm-hmm.
Where they took down a large portion of the internet for quite a few hours. Sites like Amazon.com, GitHub, Reddit, Twitter, Netflix were all taken down just by denial servicing a single company.
I'm glad we don't wake up at East Coast times. My daughter would probably have a hissy fit if Netflix was down.
Yes. But that's denial of service isn't the only attack they can launch. They could go in there, and if they have a valid credential or they found a vulnerability in the registrar, just go change all the DNS records
to
something
else. You could sinkhole everyone to nothing if you wanted, if you changed every record.
Yep.
So you could literally, as you say, take down the internet.
And there are protections for DNS to prevent things like DNS spoofing, like someone man-in-the-middling your DNS request and changing the IP address.
Thank you, Dan Kaminsky.
Yeah. There's standards like DNSSEC, but in this particular attack, that wouldn't help. If you have control of the DNS records themselves, you can just change the cryptographic information to point to something under your control.
Yep.
So, I mean, another potential weak point that someone could exploit in the future. I hope my prediction doesn't come true.
I don't want your prediction to come true, but I think even if someone will hold the internet hostage as far as taking it down, something that I think is becoming more common for the BGP side of things, you talked about a few weeks ago, China rerouting, Chinese telecom accidentally rerouting traffic that was for Google? To other sites first and via Russia, if I remember right. But this too looks like a pretty sophisticated nation state attack. So I would rather someone take the internet hostage and take it down than these subtle attacks where if we didn't realize our DNS is being poisoned. I mean, this could happen where they're rerouting your DNS to them, but still forwarding it to the valid site. So you would never know. So I think we should expect nation states, unfortunately, to be hijacking and manning the middle traffic through the two very protocols you were talking about, BGP and DNS.
And you threw China and Russia under the bus, but I mean, the United States is not exactly innocent.
We do this type of thing too. I'm not trying to pick on any country. You know, if you've heard me and Mark, you know that I largely believe that the US and Israel opened Pandora's box with Stuxnet. So we are not innocent in these sorts of nation state attacks.
And some of the leaks that we recently saw from like Vault 7 and like the NSA hack tools also pointed towards like the NSA directly working with ISPs potentially in order to man in the middle connections.
That was
like this.
The worry, and Google and Microsoft and all the big vendors as well.
So,
well, interesting.
How do you
story.
Defend against that?
I guess you can't. I mean, DNS is our phone book.
Yep.
All we can do is make sure that no one, I guess that maybe the only practical takeaway is the only DNS server that you or maybe your ISP might control is your own domain, right? In this case, there will always be a registrar that will, you know, if someone hacks it at a registrar level and says the authoritative one is not you anymore, that's a problem. But at least kind of control the security of your DNS server and maybe use behavioral analytics to make sure no one's gotten the credentials on that. And I don't think attackers will directly target one authoritative DNS server. I mean, if they can go after the registrar or the top level DNS servers, who cares who the authoritative one is?
But just in case,
secure your own as well.
Yeah. And some of these attacks were just using compromised credentials. So A, increase your password strength game.
There you
Clearly
go.
It wasn't good enough there. And then B, use multi-factor authentication. I know for a fact that most of the DNS registrars I've worked with support multi-factor authentication.
Cool.
So definitely something to look forward to. And with that, let's jump into Corey's favorite YouTube personality after the break.
I love this guy. He's my favorite.
So for our main section today, as I hinted, we're talking about Corey's favorite YouTube personality.
Nope. hard nope.
I will be genuinely honest. I'm not really big on the YouTube.
But you don't watch South Park? Come on.
I do watch South Park. I don't understand what you're doing right now.
So I have seen some. I don't subscribe or like this guy, but he does have over 80 million followers on YouTube and is still retaining the number one YouTube person in the world.
Yeah. So video streaming personalities like PewDiePie are massively popular on things like YouTube and Twitch.
And by the way, this guy started as a Let's Play, another South Park episode for old guys that don't understand why their kids watch video games rather than play them. But he started by playing video games and, you know, and streaming it, which seems to be popular with the youngins. Pop, pop, Corey, back in my day, we actually played our own video games.
And these personalities attract a bit of a cult following them as well, like a very rabid fan base. And over the past year or so, I guess PewDiePie has been at danger of losing his throne as the most subscribed YouTube channel in existence. Another YouTube channel for T-Series, which is an Indian music label, from my understanding.
It's funny, by the way, how they have regions of YouTube, because I bet you until this controversy, I would say a big percentage of US anyways, people probably had never heard of this channel. And yet, it's, by the way, today, 79.9 million followers worldwide.
but they've been as close as like within 100,000 or tens of thousands of YouTube subscribers. And this has turned PewDiePie's fan base, made them do some drastic measures in order to try and get more subscribers.
You would think it would just be some forum trolling war back and forth, but they have gone drastic, haven't they?
I did read an article of someone who bought out every single billboard, every single radio advertisement space, and every single television advertisement space in his small hometown to put up PewDiePie subscribe.
It might be the guy I'm thinking. I don't know. This is another popular YouTuber, but he's probably only in the millions range. But apparently one of them, he like put the, what are they called, the stickers on trucks and stuff. So he's been trying to get new subscribers himself by doing the PewDiePie thing. This is whole YouTuber culture of them shouting each other out.
Yep.
But yeah, it's a thing, I guess.
Back in November, though, it became a bit more drastic, where a PewDiePie follower basically hacked 50,000 printers to print out messages saying, "Hey, I've hacked your printer, and hey, by the way, here's how you subscribe to PewDiePie."
Yeah, and I we'll talk more about this too, but it was under this, can I say, bullcrap guise of, oh, we're good security people. It was like the first thing that printed was, there's a vulnerability in your printer and you should fix it, and that's why we're doing this. But then, hey, subscribe to PewDiePie. So I really don't like this. You know, I, on one hand, you can argue this isn't malicious. There's no evidence of them doing anything really bad with the, I mean, by the way, it is illegal. It is unauthorized access to a computer you don't, a computing device you don't own. But it's pretty clear that even if you got this printed message, you don't really have to worry about it other than closing some security gaps and making sure you don't show up on Shodan. But I just don't, it's, even a good security researcher without the PewDiePie thing shouldn't be forcefully telling you you have a security vulnerability by hacking it. It's, well, I get why we sometimes want to do that because people don't fix things that they should. It's just, it's something that we know is illegal, and you could get in trouble for it if someone got upset.
And for this printer thing, it was actually a relatively low sophistication attack. He basically, the person said they just scanned Shodan, found a bunch of open ports, and then used an open source tool called Printer Exploitation Kit, or PRET, off of GitHub to send print jobs to these printers that are exposed to the internet.
Which, if you put your printer on the internet, go figure, someone might use it.
That's not the only instance of hacking used to get subscribers, though.
Yeah.
Just this month, someone else exploited universal plug and play to open up ports to vulnerable Chromecasts to the tune of 70,000 and made them display a message both linking to instructions for preventing the hack, but also calling out to subscribe to PewDiePie.
Yep, it's the same guys. Just because we don't believe in buzz marketing, what we think is gray hat hacking, we won't name them, but they did what they call cast hack. And really, it had nothing. The vulnerability in these Chromecasts and Google TVs and the Google Smart Home, and I think even smart TVs sometimes have Chromecast protocol built in. It had nothing to do with UPnP. UPnP was what gave them access to the internet. And I'm not sure if we've talked about it on, we have mentioned UPnP before. It's something, it's an ease of use feature that sometimes makes it easier for certain consumer devices or gaming systems you buy to get all the traffic they need from the internet for things to work.
It's pretty common with like voice chat in video games where you need inbound access. So it helps automatically configure a router to allow that inbound access back to the system.
But I don't recommend it. You can do the same. It's harder. You have to know what you're doing. But the whole point is you don't want automatic inbound access through your router unless you know about it. So even if you need that gaming system or that voice chat system to work, you can manually go and put rules. If you manually go in and put rules, it's not universal. You know, you can pick, say it's, I don't know, it's a Microsoft voice chat product. You can pick Microsoft servers only for your rules. So we, or at least I, recommend you disable UPnP if you at least have some technical savvy, and manually set up this stuff if you really need it. But anyways, UPnP is what allowed them to have access to the Chromecast, but apparently there's a much older hack. It's one that even without UPnP is vulnerable. Someone can get in wireless range of your house, of your Chromecast. And basically, you know, it allows them to connect to it. They can see what SSID, it's mostly information disclosure as far as seeing the SSID of your wireless network. They can see the names of the clients that are connecting to your Chromecast. But the big deal, and as you said, what they really exploited was you can force any content you want on a Chromecast. So in the scheme of vulnerabilities, it's not like they gain real access to the Chromecast, and it's not like it becomes a network bastion host on your own network. But they, you know, they could troll you with Rickroll videos if they wanted to, and they could enumerate and learn more about your wireless network for other hacks.
Does Google have a fix for this yet?
As far as I know, no, not for the, even for the close proximity physical ones. And it wasn't these two PewDiePie hackers, who I won't name, who have hacked it publicly with UPnP. They're not the founders of this issue. They're just exploiting it. But I believe it was around for a while. I can find a link if you want, but I forget the two guys that originally showed it.
So if you...
I think it's in one of the videos you might see from Sicplicity.
If you disable UPnP access, though, you're pretty safe from the network.
Yeah, you're not fixing this flaw, but really, unless someone's in proximity of your Chromecast, it's...
So then put tinfoil over the windows to protect against that one?
There you go. Personally, I'm not as worried about this real flaw. Hopefully, Google will fix it. I wonder if fixing it breaks some of the capabilities of Chromecast and what. That's why it's remained, you know, gone so long.
In reality, the network portion is the more serious one. I don't want to think you have to worry about someone driving around with like a big antenna and putting crap on your Chromecast.
Yeah, and if they did and you just get a troll video, I guess there could be bad videos you don't want your kids to see, but who knows?
Yeah, no, that's a...
Anyways, so I think this is crazy. What do you think about these guys? Like, I'm cool with, I don't like PewDiePie, but if you want to support him and stuff in by buying advertisements or whatever, do you, man. But this hacking for PewDiePie, I mean, it should not be encouraged.
I think this is the dumbest series of events I've ever heard of.
Yeah.
So even just buying out advertisement space?
Yeah, yes.
For an entire city?
I'm with you.
So
I'm
dumb.
I'm a you do you, but yeah. Not something I would do.
But I do think they went too far with these two, like hacking all the printers and the Chromecast. I mean, you mentioned that they advocate themselves as like gray hats, I guess, of exposing flaws.
That it's so disingenuous. Like if some anonymous good guy hacker had done this with no PewDiePie connection, I would probably tell you, you know, technically this is illegal. You shouldn't do it. It could get you in trouble. But I probably wouldn't have been as disgusted with it just because it seems like at least his motive was honest. Mm-hmm. But as soon as you attach, you're just disingenuously trying not to get in trouble for your
trolling
crappy. Exactly.
Yeah.
It's stupid.
So I think it's dumb. I'm not looking forward to whatever they decide to up the game with next.
Oh, God, I hope they don't.
I'm sure they're not done. This feud is probably going to be ongoing.
So I don't even know enough about this feud. I know that I don't know if this was a race to 80 million, which PewDiePie has attained and beat them, or if this is a forever thing, retaining number one on YouTube.
I have a feeling that it's not going
actually,
away anytime soon.
Who cares? I don't want to know, and I suspect you don't either.
No.
I don't think either of us, and frankly, I'm sure a lot of T-Series, the music, Indian Bollywood style music video site, I'd much rather, you know, there's probably lots of video people that like those videos.
Yeah.
That's probably better than some weird bro army guy.
So, yes, if you own a printer, make sure it's not exposed to the internet. If you own a Chromecast, make sure UPnP is disabled. That way you don't become a victim of the bro army.
And if you watch PewDiePie,
I guess that's the end of our show.
Sorry, if you watch PewDiePie, that's cool, guys.
I don't really care what you do. You be you. Hey, everyone. Thank you again for listening. As always, if you enjoyed this episode, please don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe, unless you're on Google Play, which apparently you can't review.
Google, what's up, man? Give us some reviews. Aren't you a search site? Don't you want the extra metadata?
If you have any questions or suggestions for future episode topics, you can reach out to Corey and I on Twitter. I'm at XORRO_. Corey is at SecAdept. and the both of us are at #the443podcast. Thanks again for listening, and we will see you again next week.